Welcome, this is Dave. Welcome to the Seller Seminar Series on Successful Navigation of Change and Transition. We're going to be talking about mind, brain, and behavior strategies. I'm going to preserve some time at the beginning and the end of each seminar for discussion. If you'll manage the background noise, mute is *6, so that we can have a discussion about the material, questions, and reflections that you have about it. First, the question to you, I need a management of the background noise. If there's anything going on, if you'll do a *6 and mute. The two questions that I'd like you to respond to now, and thanks to those of you who have already responded, if we were to sit down face-to-face right now, what's the most important question you have about this topic? And secondly, after our four seminars, if you walk away saying this is one of the best seminars you've ever attended, what would you walk away with? Any responses from any of you right now to either or both of those questions? But one at a time. Anybody have a response to that about what you'd really like to take away? This is basically what we specialize in as professional coaches, change and transitions. And my application, what we'll be talking about, is applying the mind and brain sciences to strategic coaching to facilitate, to catalyze change and transition in various ways with our clients. And as you see from the outline, and I want to emphasize this, at the link that you were given, where you, there's some background noise. You're not hearing it most likely, but your microphone is picking it up. So until you're ready to speak, if you would mute, *6, because anything, paper shuffling or movement, will be picked up. You'll see the outline is a fairly annotated outline, so ideally you won't need to take a lot of notes. But it will be something that I think will be useful to you to jot down anything that you have that you want to recall about this on the outline. And that's also the page where you'll find the recorded sessions, the seminars that will be posted usually by the next day by the IT guy, Bill. So any questions, any responses to those two questions right now about what you hope to get out of this?
Hi, Dave. This is Ellen.
Hey, welcome.
How are you?
Great.
I'm good. How are you? Good. Thank you. Well, I responded just very shortly ago to your email, and as I said, I didn't get it very long before, so they're not very well thought out. But to your first question, I'm really most curious about how the brain processes transition, and so how we will be able to learn from that information to ease that process for the variety of situations that we get to discuss in this course.
Well, you came to the right place. The entire spectrum of the mind and brain sciences applied to strategic coaching, I believe, is the very best way that we can help clients make changes that last. And in the initial seminar, where we'll talk about the dynamics of change and transition, I'm going to kind of synthesize a number of different disciplines to look at practical ways that we can listen for and facilitate change with clients. So it's going to be a kind of an overview, and then we're going to look at how to and look at a systematic way to do that that
cool.
will rely on our understanding of brain algorithms, among other
cool.
things. So, yeah, great.
And then I had... Can I ask a question before other people respond?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I'm not sure if I'm on the right link because the link from that what you provided, is it just the very basic seminar 1, 2, 3, and 4 without a lot of like detail in between, or am I missing something?
No, that's it. That's where
okay.
those are the ports where the online playback, where the recording will be posted. Above that,
okay.
you'll see a link to download the outline and some work pages.
Hmm.
So that's what you see.
I see. Okay.
You download it, you can print it.
I gotcha.
And I resent that link today.
Yep,
so
I see it now.
Other questions, things that you think about in terms of either of those questions? If you think about it, those are the two questions that we ask our clients in mentor coaching. What would you most like to focus on, and what would you like to take away? Same things applied here. And I'm eager to hear your responses and any feedback ongoing. If you have questions or things that we didn't cover, and especially I got a note from a number of people that they weren't able to attend our initial seminar. So when you're hearing this, send me any questions or comments you have. I'll work it into our discussion at the beginning of our next seminar. And anything that comes up while we're on lecture mode, jot it down, and I'll reserve some time at the end for discussion. So anything else right now? Okay, well, hold on. We're going to go to lecture mode. Okay, as I mentioned, we're going to talk in this initial seminar about the dynamics and the developmental stages of change and transition. First, what's your story? When we want someone to know who we are, we share stories of our childhoods, our families, what's important to us. When we know people well, we know their stories. We know what's important, what shaped and molded them, the trials and turning points that have tested them. Our own story is a significant organizer of our experiences. It's a continuity of where we've been, where we are now, even where we'll go. Stories define, orient, and guide us. And a good story is never more necessary than at the time of change and transition, a time that's unsettling, confusing, uncertain, insecure. Think about the transition that each of you made, those of you who are professional coaches, and I know a large number of you are, how significant a change that was, because that was a change in your professional life, in your career. So you know that experience directly. The ability to craft a good story at this crucial time is significant to the success of everything that follows. We learn through stories. We use stories to understand, to make sense of things, and to remember. A good story bridges past and present to make sense of where we were, where we are, and the uncertain future. A critical element of our well-being is how we understand what happens to us and why. Some approaches derail because they attempt to change someone's behavior without considering what it does to their personal stories and especially their identity. We're going to return to that. First, let's look at the dynamics of change. The change is the event, the situation. You move to a new city, divorce, retire, have a significant loss, take a new job, lose an old one, or change careers. As we focus on change, we address the rituals of change, the work tools, the strategic goals. So here are some things to reflect on. First, the idea of change will create anticipation. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, trepidation, even anxiety. Next, if you continue rather than return to your comfort zone, expansion into the new experience. Then, finally, mastery. There are a couple of additional aspects of experiencing change that may seem paradoxical, but those of you working with clients have seen these, and I want to try to give word and concept to them. Every step forward means relinquishing a past position. Someone must mourn. They must say goodbye emotionally as well as practically to a familiar, maybe long-held, and practiced old story, even one that doesn't work that well. This is a process. It's a developmental step, not something you can just say and make it so or recognize it and change it. It's like saying goodbye to an old friend, to give up a habit, a pattern of behavior, or a hope that by getting the old story just right or doing it better, going to finally work. And secondly, the more subtle aspect in learning something new and creating change is an injury to self-esteem. This carefully crafted old story, even with some aspects of identity attached, is replaced by something better. I see at least six components in this dynamic of change. Now, these are not headlines. You won't see signs or signals that you can label, but these are just for your reflection to think about, more like internal conceptual markers. The myth that there's a perfect choice. The illusion that the perfect choice will solve all problems. The disappointment that nothing is really perfect. There isn't even an ultimate arbiter of fairness. And the scientific term for that is adulthood. The development, the recognition that no one's going to take care of it for you. Another variety of adulthood. The growth to take the next best action. And finally, the consolidation, the happy, sad experience resulting. Happy about the effectiveness of not constructing an obstacle to move ahead, and sad about mourning an old story. Every transition begins with an ending, a change event, and we have to let go of the old before we can begin the new. Every beginning ends something. And as Agnes Allen, American writer, said, almost anything is easier to get into than out of. Changing to a better job or career may ironically cause a similar grief and confusion as the sad end of an important relationship in the past. The reason it's important to recognize this is that some of the feelings you experience today may have nothing to do with the present ending, but come from the resonance with similar situations in the past. Letting go is just difficult. Herodotus, Greek historian in the 5th century BC, said this, "Diseases always attack men when they are exposed to change." Even when we look forward to a change and anticipate it eagerly, some of us still hold on to what we used to be, and we wonder whether the change was a good or a bad event. We are defined, and we define ourselves, by our roles and relationships, those we like as well as the ones we don't. Letting go is an ambiguous experience. New skills are needed for negotiating the passage, separating old from new. The characteristic ways of coping with endings need to be understood, because each person has his or her own style of ending and new beginning. I'll give you some examples. You may recognize yourself, and this is about all of us. People tend to respond to endings in their own typical way, to have characteristic reactions to ending and a similar mental state and mood. Four of the most common styles of ending. Abrupt. It's designed maybe to deny the impact and the meaning of change. Slow and gradual, so that it's difficult to see that anything important is really happening. Three, an external focus. Some people learn to cultivate a subtle way of covertly inviting people to act upon them when change is in the air. And fourth, active or passive, proactive or reactive. Some people work to establish blamelessness in regard to endings. She just walked out. No warning, no nothing. She just left me. It's like someone who shouts, "I didn't do it," when the police arrive. And you know exactly, by calling attention to himself, it makes everybody suspicious of that person. How you approach change comes from the style you've developed for dealing with endings. That style is likely to reflect early experience as well as later influence and be consistent over time and situation. Typically, someone repeats a behavior pattern, as with other important losses. One person feels the grief and anxiety for the entire group, for example. Another comforts the mourner. Another takes over the routine responsibility. And another assumes control for the situation. These are roles that you usually see in a family or in a group. Although it's advantageous to understand your own style of endings, a part of you will resist that understanding with passion. Now, we're not talking about just the big endings here, divorce, career transition, job loss, children leaving from college, retirement. Even the small endings have their own personality that's consistent with the big endings. Think about how you tend to act at the end of an evening at a friend's house or after a night on the town. Do you drag things out by starting new activities or new conversations when others seem ready to leave? Do you suddenly say it was a nice evening and abruptly dash off? Do you say goodbye to everyone or leave ahead of plans so you could avoid the goodbyes? Notice how the small and large endings can be the same. Leaving a job or moving from a neighborhood, as well as having dinner with friends. The person who leaves early and the one who stays late both may be avoiding endings in their own way and their own discomfort of the disruption. A dasher and a lingerer usually share the same dynamic. There are things we don't want to happen but have to accept. Things we don't want to know but have to learn. People we can't live without but have to let go. It's the ending that makes the beginning possible. Here are some principles of letting go, and these are in your outline. There are basically 10, and I'm going to wait for just a second for you to find this in the outline to know that you don't have to frantically take notes. The first principle of letting go, accept the reality as well as the importance of the subjective losses, of the meaning of the loss. Acknowledge the loss openly. Accept and expect overreaction. Overreaction comes because of the emotional impact of the loss, as well as how it resonates with past losses. So you're dealing with a lot more than just what's in the immediate foreground usually. Expect and accept the process of grief in each of its five stages: anger, bargaining, anxiety, sadness, and then disorientation and confusion. Five, consider compensating for the losses. Ask, what can I give back to balance what's been taken away or lost? Learn as much as possible about the loss in order to benefit from it. Define what's over and what isn't over. Those are not always evident. Mark the endings. Rather than just talking about the endings, create actions or activities that dramatize them. When Rene McPherson took over the leadership of Dana Corporation, he saw that operations were choked by a culture of rules that nobody could remember. In the first management meeting, he piled all the company manuals on a table. They formed a stack almost 2 feet tall. Then he pushed them to the floor and held up a single piece of paper on which corporate principles were typed. He said, "These are our new organizational principles." 8, treat the past with respect. 9, take a piece of the old story with you. 10, endings ensure the continuity of what really matters, and the past, the so-called good old days, will be idealized at times, denigrated at times. The changes anyone experiences are different than anything they've ever experienced before, no matter how much you plan for it. The transition process by which people can get through change is a system that's well mapped, or can be. And I want to look at one way of going about creating that map. So let's look at now the dynamics of transition, now that we've looked at some dynamics of change. The change event is the snapshot. The change process is the wide-angle view. The transition is the time-lapse photograph. The transition is the process of the internal story of change. It's a shift in orientation, even self-definition. Transition is awareness of the seasonal cycles while attending to the daily weather. As you respond to change and embrace transition, you let go of the old story, the outlived chapter, and evolve into your new story. You transform a new identity to internalize the changes, to sustain and enhance them. Now, the reason I'm emphasizing what all this does to your identity is that one of the most powerful forces of the human psyche is that we always return to our identity, the core essence of who we are. Whenever there's a change in behavior, unless there's also a transformation of the operating model of who and how you are, you know this from working with clients, then someone will return to the old behavior. This is part of what makes change permanent. So, as you respond to change and embrace transition, you let go of the old story, the outlived chapter, and evolve into a new story. You transform a new identity to internalize the changes, to sustain and enhance them. The transition story provides the coherence that will reassure in the present and will foreshadow the future. The person you were yesterday is the person you are today, and the person you will be tomorrow only more so. Yet, paradoxically, old stories need to be mourned, and along with them, the self left behind. You also have your own characteristic way of a new beginning, just as with endings. Change and renewal seems to involve new relationships, but it can also involve new places or projects. For some, it begins with a new state of mind, a new feeling, self-image, or goal. Sometimes the beginning results from careful and conscious effort, but also for many people, important new beginnings have a mysterious and sometimes accidental quality to them. Although we think we take charge of our lives and plan carefully, some of the most important beginnings take place in the unfocused darkness outside our awareness. Let me give you an example. 2 years after my divorce, I was at an author's conference in Austin. I live in Houston, so that's like 3.5 hours away. I was planning to leave Saturday after the last conference meeting. I had just enough time to drive to my ranch between Austin and Houston to catch the sunset. Now, one of the measures of the major measure of the quality of my life is the number of sunsets. I'm at the ranch on the porch with my two best riding companions, a cigar and a single malt scotch, watching the sunset over the lake and trees. But I decided for some unknown reason to stay for the social hour, a wine and cheese event. Nothing, by the way, to compare to any single malt scotch, never mind the cigar and the sunset. There I met my future wife. 2 years later, we would marry on that porch that I usually spent weekends at, that I didn't get to that evening for sunset, at sunset with her children and mine attending. That was 14 years ago. Without a transition, simply change rearranges the furniture. People imagine that they can prepare for retirement by making specific changes such as adequate financial preparation, a place to live, and developing new interests. But that's only rearranging the furniture. The challenge is the transition. People have to let go of the outlived chapters of their life story and find a new one to replace it, or the outlived chapters of a business story to create a new one, wherever in life that transition occurs. At times, rituals and celebrations further the process of transition as well as serve as markers. Every lifetime has its own unique rhythm, and the personal development steps for both change and transition deserve attention. Transition is a process. It takes time. No matter how many people you put on the job, it still takes 9 months to make a baby. Three components of transition. First, there's an ending. Then there's a neutral zone, an important directionless time in between that's filled with a number of things, mourning, work, with getting ready. And lastly, you finish with a new beginning. So let's look at those, because you're going to see elements of these three developmental steps in every client you work with, because whatever the focus is, it's going to be the process of change and transition in some way. First, the ending. Every transition begins with an ending. Even though it sounds backwards, endings always come first, willingly or unwillingly, an ending. The first task is to let go. whether at the individual or the organizational level, whether the source of transition is an external change or an internal development, the transitions always start with an ending. To start doing things a new way, you have to end the way you're doing them now. The most common mistake is to add a new pattern to the ones already existing. And I'll explain in a bit from a brain science perspective why that doesn't work. I'll just sort of adumbrate that now. Every belief, every pattern of attachment, of behavior, of emotion, every relationship pattern is an anatomical reality in your brain. So if you consider that every belief or fact is an anatomical reality in your brain, you can't expect just to present a new fact that seems better or a new belief that seems better and expect it to suddenly overwrite the one that's already there. Now, change can occur, as you know, but it's an internal job and it's a process. And usually in our work with clients, it's a collaborative process. The impact of the transition doesn't necessarily bear a direct relationship to the importance of the change that triggered it. One person can be brought to an abrupt standstill by a divorce or job loss, while another person takes it in stride. Someone else may come to terms with a debilitating illness, but be demolished by the loss of a pet. Here's one dramatic way to mark an ending of a story. Spanish explorer Hernando Cortes came ashore with his men at Veracruz, and he knew that his men were extremely reluctant about the exploration ahead and knew the danger. They were scared. There was all the aspects of the unknown. Some had called it hopeless. Faced with a continent full of unknown adversaries, each person in his party was ambivalent about moving ahead versus turning back. Cortes burned the ships. So there are some components. There are five aspects of an ending experience. One, disengagement. Usual events disengage from the context and the identity in which people know themselves. Things, as I mentioned, like divorce, death, job change, move, illness. The disengagement begins a process of change. Two, dismantling. Old familiar behaviors and habitual practices are taken apart a piece at a time. This gradual transition involves slowly unpacking the lost relationship, including the lost identity that's part of it. An ending stops what used to be. It's not the old way anymore, but not yet the new way in this dismantling process. Three, disidentification. Ending connections with what used to be, you also lose a way of defining yourself. Old friends you didn't inherit in the divorce. I'll still miss them. Often people describe this phase as not being quite sure who they are. I thought about this loss a good deal when I came to terms with retiring from my practice of teaching psychiatry and psychoanalysis to become an executive mentor coach. I had planned for this retirement. For 25 years of practice and 7 years prior to that of medical school and residency, though, I had identified with being a doctor. I wondered if using the MD after my name was a way of hanging on to that identity, though I clearly knew I was no longer practicing, nor would I ever return to it. The old identity can potentially stand in the way of transition as well as of transformation and self-renewal. Four, disenchantment. Coexisting with a still vivid picture of the way things are is the split-screen image of the way things were. Disenchantment is the discovery that in some sense your world is just no longer the way it used to be. Disenchantment is a recurrent experience through the lifetime of anyone who has the courage to trust and believe in the first place. Some significant transitions began with disenchantment, the loss of a job, the loss of a relationship. Listen for this possible distinction in your clients. The disenchanted person moves on, while the disillusioned person goes through the play again with new actors, always on a perpetual quest for the elusive, not letting go. So they create repetitions. And finally, 5, disorientation. Disorientation affects a sense of place, space, as well as time. The usual way of even structuring time changes. The future's unclear. Now, these 5 elements of ending are not a developmental sequence. They're not in any particular order for any one person. For example, in a divorce, one partner may experience disidentification and disorientation and then decide to act, which leads to disengagement. So if you're scoring that play, it's 3-5-1. The other partner, unaware of the impending change, begins an ending with disengagement and the challenge of disenchantment, becoming disoriented. That's 1-4-5. There's no normal or natural order to this sequence, nor is there any normal order of reactions to an ending. The endings are the first rather than the last act of the play. Note that the first, disenchantment, refers exclusively to external change. The second, dismantling, can be either internal or external. And the last 3, disidentification, disenchantment, and disorientation, are all internal. It's the internal things that hold us to the past, and we often try to deal only with the external issues because they seem more controllable somehow, a focus that we can be effective, supposedly, to leave the relationship, the job, to move across the country. This focus uses change to avoid transition, to storm out of a job because of a bad boss, rather than discover what it is that keeps you finding and agreeing to work for such bosses, to end another relationship rather than letting go of the behaviors, beliefs, and attitudes that keep choosing the same people and recreating the same dissatisfying relationships. Remember your friend from college who had numerous relationships, yet the dozens of faces were on the same woman or the same man? After someone struggles internally with change and then begins to grapple with transition, this is the true work, the beginning of transformation. So, number 2, the mid-phase, the neutral zone. A resistance to transition is often not the problem of giving up a job or relationship or even an identity. The real problem is the time of nothingness that awakens old fears about abandonment, even death. People in transition will create new ways to return to the old story. Every ending is followed by some distress or confusion. We can expect that as part of a transition. Ending, confusion, new beginning. People will resist both the change and the transition. They will return to the familiar. You can reframe this return to the familiar with a client, for example, as a way of measuring progress to see how far you've come, or as an opportunity to validate your commitment to move forward. This in-between time of transformation is the real work of letting go and prepares the foundation for the next stage. It's important not to rush through this mid-phase, this neutral zone, too quickly in order to avoid or minimize the disruption. It's a place that we naturally don't want to linger because it's a discomfort. We don't know what's happening next. We're unfamiliar with it. We want to return to a comfort zone or go ahead and get to the new place, after all. This is a very important time for a work in progress. When I went through my career transition, I needed a time in between before I began my new career. I knew I was a medical professional in mind and heart, and I would be tempted to revert to that identity and style of being if I was in doubt about my new endeavor, which is why I made a wholesale transition to retire completely from my medical practice, close this out, then spend some time at my ranch writing and physically working before I began training for certification as a professional coach. Now, in another era, the person in transition left the village and went into a forest or desert to remain for a time, removed from old connections and without old identities, the old reality changed as well. This in-between time of empty space fostered a generation of a new sense of self. So actually, mine was way closer to caveman than I realized. There was a Sunday New York Times review of books when Gregory Cowell said, if your marriage fails, you go for a long walk in the woods or a longer walk. When someone doesn't allow this essential period of time, important work is avoided. If transition is treated as an event, like crossing a street, an entire necessary process is averted. When Teddy Roosevelt lost his wife and his mother on the same day when he was 25, he went to the Badlands to escape his depression and began riding his horse 15 hours a day. Often someone, without even quite knowing why, finds ways of being alone and away from familiar distractions. Sometimes it's a long weekend alone in a quiet place. Having the time to think things over and not have to do much of anything is the point. One of the significant transitions in work life is an internal one. It's likely that someone after the age of 40, people transition from being motivated by the chance to demonstrate competence to being motivated by the chance to find personal meaning in work and its results. Think about what motivated you to move to professional coaching. This is the shift from the question of how to the question of why. Competence begins to lose its force as a source of motivation at a point in time in life. To do the same thing over and over becomes less challenging, less invigorating. Now, the brain also plays a role in this process. Dopamine is the brain chemical that induces excitement by anticipating pleasure or reward. The rush from dopamine release motivates people to take risk. The risk is exciting. It adds to the dopamine release. But neuroscientists have shown that anticipating a reward is even more exciting than actually achieving it. Why is that? Because receiving a reward actually shuts down this anticipatory release of dopamine and along with it, the accompanying positive feelings and high energy. The brain shifts to another system mediated by norepinephrine, the chemical system of marathons, not sprints like dopamine. This explains the paradox. I'll bet that you have noticed at some level that the expectation of an event is more exciting than the actual event. This has been demonstrated in various areas. An investor will feel more positive when expecting a stock to rise, but not quite as excited as anticipated when it actually does rise. The purchase of a big-ticket item, a new car that you've been wanting for a long time, isn't quite as exciting as expected. And this often takes the form of buyer's remorse, because we label that change of state of mind in a way that makes it make sense, although it's not really the cause. Another thing to think about, clients can reach plateaus in coaching after a month or two and consider suspending work. This is a way that you can think about to ladder challenges, successes, stepwise process. What we can do in coaching is to foster attitudes that promote curiosity, openness, and which introduce new learning. For example, as I mentioned, to ladder challenges and successes. And by knowing this phenomenon, we can address it and explain it as a natural development. Two questions to focus on the meanings of transition at a particular time in life. One, what is it time to let go of in my life right now? Remember, transition starts with letting go. An important distinction between a change and a transition is that change depends and is focused on reaching a goal. And transition began with letting go of what no longer fits the life stage that you're in. And each person has to figure out what no longer fits. Usually it's internal rather than external. The transition begins with letting go of something you've assumed or believed, some way you've always seen yourself, some outlook or attitude toward others. And the second question, what is waiting to make its entrance into my life now? Think about that for a minute. The answer is usually something internal, something subjective, often in the shape of an idea or a question you ask yourself. It may feel like a message to you, a message that something is standing just outside the door of everyday awareness, waiting for your attention. We have to deal with endings all of our lives, yet curiously we also handle them poorly. We either take them too seriously by confusing them with finality, or see them as something without sequel, forgetting that they're simply the first phase of a transition process, a necessary precondition of self-renewal. So at the same time we fail to take them seriously enough because they scare us, we try to avoid them. I saw this in my therapy and analytic practice. It's not the loss of someone that creates problems, but the failure to internalize that person and relationship. For some, their present consists at least in part of a past they've not quite let go of. An illustration of the emptiness of this neutral zone is, we haven't left the mid-zone yet, as you might guess, is Leo Tolstoy's description. And here's how he described it. I felt that something had broken within me on which my life had always rested, that I had nothing left to hold on to, and that morally, my life had stopped, and yet I could give no reasonable meaning to any action of my life. And I was surprised that I had not understood this from the beginning. My state of mind was as if some wicked and stupid jest was played upon me by someone. I asked myself, what will be the outcome of what I do today? What shall I do tomorrow? What will be the outcome of my life? Why should I live? Why should I do anything? Now, a way to think about some of the reasons for this emptiness between the old life and the new include the transformation process is essentially a death and rebirth process. It's just not a mechanical modification. It's not a street to be crossed. And the process of disengagement and reintegration is the source of renewal, the way an apple tree needs the cold of winter. And thirdly, the emptiness between the stages of a life journey provides a perspective on the stages themselves. And that to make a little bit more sense, this in-between time provides access to a view, a perspective that can occur nowhere else. So here's a summary of the creative use of this neutral zone, this mid-phase. Embrace setbacks, losses, disadvantages as entry points into new solutions. Establish a regular time and place to be alone, to step back, to take stock, to question the usual, and to come up with new and creative solutions. Provide opportunities for others important in your change and transition to engage in this with you as well. Accept your need for this time in the neutral zone. Make sense of your experience as important so it doesn't feel just like a dead-end road. Understanding this transition phase helps avoid the traps of moving too fast forward or going into reverse to attempt to re-enter the old situation. Trying to speed things up disrupts the necessary process that occurs. It's a process, not an event. Engage in training and techniques of discovery and innovation. Take the opportunity to discover what you really want. Engage in experimentation. Try out new ideas. After I closed my practice, I considered using my experience as founder and CEO of a couple of healthcare corporations and involvement with a startup with partners that went through venture capital and merger acquisition to really enter the corporate world to become an executive. And thankfully, that lasted about 25 seconds. Keep a log of neutral zone experiences. Take this pause in the action of your life to write an autobiography. Whether or not it's not important about publishing it, it's important that you do it, that you get this process in an output channel. And writing about it is certainly one way to do it. Think of what would be unlived in your life if it ended today. And lastly, reflect consciously on the present transition experiences in your own life. The neutral zone, the time between the old and new, is a rich time for insight. And three, the third stage of this whole process, you finish with a new beginning. A new beginning follows the ending, and the new beginning involves changing how you see yourself, including aspects of your identity. It's when the endings are finished that we can truly begin. The end always allows a new beginning. We may not always know when the ending is complete, and when we've been in the neutral zone long enough, especially because it's a new path, a new beginning. For a time, we may not even know which is a real path. Think about the important beginnings in your past. You bumped into an old friend you hadn't seen for years, and he told you about a job at his company that opened up that morning. You met your spouse-to-be at a party that you really hadn't wanted to go to and almost skip. You picked up a book that changed your life because it was the only one lying on a friend's coffee table when you dropped by for an unexpected visit. The lesson in these experiences is that when we're ready to make a new beginning, we will find an opportunity. When you're ready to learn, a teacher will appear. There will be a wine and cheese event. New beginnings often occur with an internal realignment rather than an external shift, and that's important. When we are aligned with deep longings, when our needs and ideals or the needs and ideals of a client align with purpose, that means all of somebody's going in the same direction. Each step forward will set off an inner warning system. That's because the brain's error detection mechanism will read that something's wrong, something is not as expected. This is not a signal to retreat to an old way of being. Never underestimate the change back pressure from the system. Your family, your company, they each have a brain with an error detection mechanism too. It's their self-statement of reaction to change. It's not an attempt to sabotage you. It's an attempt to restore normal order and not do the work of change. That's how our brains are wired. A group or system has a status quo bias and inertia, as well as individuals do. Jung said that the most important problems can't be solved. They have to be outgrown. An important distinction here is this. Have you really moved through the endings and the neutral zone to find the beginning you now want to follow? Or is this beginning a way of avoiding an ending and aborting the neutral zone experience? A time for pause and reflection. One thing you can do is to begin to identify yourself with the final result of the new beginning. What it's going to feel like when you've actually done what you're setting out to do. That's the most basic motivation we have to do something, is how we imagine we're going to feel when we do it. That's why we do what we do. We understandably have ambivalence about new beginnings. We've not established a comfort zone yet, not grooved a default mode in our brains yet, have not created the software to automatically support the story of the rewiring of our brain yet, and we don't know the outcome. So, beginnings may reactivate some old anxieties as well as making it very real that the ending has happened, or it's right here, right in front of us. The risk and uncertainty of the new beginning will resonate with past anxiety, perhaps even trigger old memories of failures. But don't believe every thought you have. And a new beginning will erode the equilibrium of the neutral zone. For example, one of the most challenging aspects of being an adult and taking care of ourselves is that we have to come to the end of the past. the hope that someone else is going to do it for us. And it's more difficult to let go of what never was, even that, than what was traumatically so, because you have to give up hope of ever having it exactly the way you wanted it. And with it, the illusion that there's the ultimate arbiter of fairness. New beginnings need to have a clear sense of purpose. To reinforce a new beginning, you'll have to evolve a new identity as well as new story that replaces the old one. In the beginning, take things step by step. This is what you know from coaching. Recognize the assumption and resist the temptation that some other route would go smoothly with events always exciting and meaningful. It's like comparing yourself with someone else. You're comparing your inside to their outside. That's not an apples-to-apples comparison. It's important in a new beginning to not be preoccupied with results. If you want to change a habit, focus on the system, not the goal. You know that from coaching and working with clients. For example, rather than each interview that doesn't produce a job being a failure and everything that happened being a mistake, reframe the process as an activity where each interview teaches you something, creates a new contact, deepens an understanding of the process and of yourself. This is an important aspect of a new beginning, to shift your purpose from the goal to the process of reaching the goal, to the system. For example, the new job is to find a job. Every transition is a transition from something to something. Each of these transitions corresponds to internal changes, or they won't last, and integration of a new identity with elements of the old. There are many endings, many little beginnings with emptiness and creation that are there as part of each step. There are very few times that we actually have direct contact with our future selves. We seldom review our present situations as they might appear to a relatively objective future self. When we plan ahead, we specify goals rather than future development of identity or states of mind. This may contribute to looking back at our own past with a kind of an alienation or a disbelief, almost as someone else had lived it. Exceptions occur at certain moments in life, possibly prompted by the excitement of a major event, that we look ahead in time and think, I'll remember this moment forever. This awareness seems to change present experience to enhance it with a special lighting and sharp focus. So here are three or four considerations to reinforce new beginnings. Be consistent. This is the best way to get an idea of how something will work, to be consistent and be totally immersed in the process. Shrink the change to ensure stepwise successes. Evolve a new identity. Generate perhaps an emblem, a symbol of this new identity, a representation that can be a consistent point of reference. And celebrate small successes. In 10 or 20 years, when we look back on present time, laced among expectations will inevitably be some envy and regret. We envy the younger self who could relatively do so much, and will regret that the younger self did not do more, different, or better. We may wonder why we learned too little, loved too small, risked too low, spent too much time in routine and distraction. This view from a future self looking back to the present can be very informative. I'd like to end this with a kind of mindfulness meditation that I want to guide you in, a question and a challenge. First, get very comfortable. Take a deep breath to breathe in relaxation. Breathe out any tension. Close your eyes and imagine a photograph of you 100 years from now. What is the story you most want your great-grandchildren to tell about you? Do that in one succinct sentence if you can. So here's the challenge. With your eyes still closed in a relaxed position, consider this. What if right now is a turning point for you? The time your grandchildren will tell stories about years from now. The time you awakened your deep passion and acted on it. The time you did what you were always meant to do. Or, this moment of truth may be a brief awakening silenced by the sensible obstacles you're familiar with constructing. In that case, your grandchildren will have to be content telling stories about your favorite sports team or what great cookies you used to bake. It will all depend on how brave you are. We're in discussion mode now. We have less time than I had hoped or planned, but thoughts or questions or clarifications about anything that we talked about or any reactions to anything that we talked about? And remember, if there's anything that didn't quite make sense, which may be a large part because I always struggle with, there's so much I want to share with you and condense that I know it's, you know, like taking a drink from a fire hose. There's a whole lot, and it may be too much, but I want to convey all this information to you. So that's part of why it's recorded, so that if there's a component you want to go back and listen to, you can do fast forward and that sort of thing. But any question now? We still have 2 or 3 minutes to have a discussion.
Well, I have a question, Dr.
Yes.
Kruger.
Yes.
This is Susan Rome. Thank
you. Call me Dave.
Okay, Dave.
Right.
This
all
is
right,
Susan
Dave.
Rome. I've taken a few of your courses before. My brain gets so full, and I try to listen so fast. What I want to know is what do you do with the fear from wanting to stay in the old place and knowing desperately that you or your client needs a neutral place? What's the motivator? How do you get unstuck from staying in the, clinging on to the not letting go of the old?
That's a very good question, and that's going to take us 3 more seminars to answer because it's such an excellent question. We're going to talk next time about how to change mind, brain, and behavior. And then in the 3rd seminar, a systematic way to understand and deconstruct an old story, to look at the algorithms of our mind and brain system to systematically create a new story or a revised story with your clients. But the first place to begin is with the experience that you just described. Our brains don't know the difference between anxiety and excitement. They register in exactly the same way in our brains, so that means how we frame the experience determines whether we experience it as anxiety or whether we experience it as excitement. And that framing and those first nanoseconds will boot up a mindset that will process the entire remainder of that experience. It's very much like in conversational intelligence, the first few words someone says or the first few words you read boots up a particular mindset in the listener or the reader. If those words are perceived as challenging, as pejorative, as authoritarian, as questioning trust, it boots up a mindset that's mediated by stress chemicals. If, however, those first few words are ones that engage in a collaborative mode, it boots up a whole system that's mediated by oxytocin, the neurochemical of bonding and connection. So the first few words that are said boots up a mindset. The framing, in this instance, in your question, the framing determines whether we're going to perceive and process it as excitement and look for possibilities, which is exactly what we do in coaching, or whether we frame it as anxiety, and that immediately boots up a mindset that has to do with problems, and we're in some time capsule of the past, and you can't create change when you're in a time capsule by definition. So regulating a state of mind and framing something initially is important, and we're going to spend an entire seminar looking at just that. So does that make sense as the beginning of an answer with a promise for more, Susan?
It does, as long as you promise me that there's a way to get out of the time capsule.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's
I mean, you know, like when an event occurs, for example, when my husband died, there was nothing exciting about that. It was there was no
right.
way to reframe
okay.
that into an excitement thing.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
you know, so that's kind of, you know, and I'm dealing with some clients that are dealing with death and are in, you know, with divorce and change. And, it's easier for me to tell them to get excited than it is for myself.
Exactly. We will come back to that and deal with that, and that's definitely a to be continued, because I think it's a really important question that everyone
okay.
is dealing with personally and professionally. So
okay.
thanks for that, and thank you all for your responses and your energy and interaction during the seminar. I look forward to picking up with you, and if there are questions or comments, don't hesitate to send me an email. And I'll incorporate that into the discussion at the beginning. So thanks very, very much. I look forward to picking up right here a week. Bye now. See you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.